The BMC Amy Z Talk and Capuware Modern Mainframe Podcasts have joined forces. You can find your favorite episodes from both podcasts, as well as new insight and discussion, soundcloud.com/modernmainframe. Capuware is now BMC Capuware, providing a complete app dev toolkit which enables you to make the mainframe as adaptive as any other platform and start your journey to becoming an autonomous digital enterprise with a mainframe-inclusive DevOps toolchain.
You remain in a standing position with your feet apart.
Hello. Welcome to Compuware CSI, the Customer Success Investigators. CSI is a podcast series about a team of gritty, dedicated mainframe software engineers, experts, and customer service professionals trained to help large organizations achieve digital transformation. Our investigators will bring you evidence, facts, and true stories from the field on how to improve quality, efficiency, and velocity. Join me, Craig Harwell, your host, as we welcome special guests and investigators each week on Compuware's CSI podcast series. This week we have a returning investigator in Atul Bovan. Atul?
Hi everyone, good to be back.
And we have some new blood with one of our other colleagues, Stuart Ashby, who has joined us this week to talk about his role in Compuware and how he is integrating with our DevOps messaging. Say hello, Stuart.
Hi, Craig. Thanks for the invite today.
We also have one other very special guest today to talk us through the customer success that he has actually witnessed himself. So we have Reg Wilkinson joining us from Lloyds Banking Group to talk through their mainframe DevOps journey, what the challenges are and how they are rising to those challenges in different ways. And of course, I've asked our investigators to pick the bones out of some of Reg's comments and how they're conducting the evolution of their pipeline through the business. But before we do that, I'd like to welcome Stuart in a bit more detail and allow Stuart to do a bit more of an introduction. Many of you may have met with Stuart as he kind of delivers some of our key DevOps messaging. But importantly, his background is relevant to this story. So Stuart, over to you. Could you give us a bit of a background on your history and your role at Compuware now?
Thanks, Craig. Sure. I was in a really fortunate position looking after a Compuware relationship at a UK retail bank some 5.5 years ago, just as Compuware started to transition to the quarterly delivery cadence. I had a contract that had just been signed for 4 years, and I made it my goal to get the most out of the products that were being licensed. And it was incredible how quick the innovation came from Compuware, and it was all customer focused. The responses from customers to Compuware around enhancement or the direction of travel for their organizations was being picked up and delivered into the product in new features or adaptations every quarter. So that made it easy to consume. And then for me, the journey ultimately resulted in joining Compuware 18 months ago to share some of those mainframe development opportunities to modernize and accelerate development using Compuware tooling. Here I am.
Yeah, I often introduce you as poacher turned gamekeeper, or probably vice versa. But Atul, what's it been like embracing one of our own customers into the team here at Compuware?
It's been really amazing. So what Stuart brings into the team really is the perspective from somebody who's felt the pain of the development lifecycle, the ups and downs, and he's been amazing in terms of providing guidance to our development teams and to help us in terms of the engagement with our customers now to make sure that we are hearing exactly what they're saying, not what we want to hear. So it's been a breath of fresh air. So Stuart, welcome to Compuware.
Well, we'll hear more from Stuart and Atul in just a moment, but just introducing another valued customer, Reg Wilkinson, who has been doing some terrific work with his team over in Lloyds Banking Group. We've got three sections for you to listen to him today, and he's going to take us on that journey. So over to you, Reg.
Good afternoon, Reg Wilkinson. Thank you very much for joining us. Could you just give us a background and introduction to your role at Lloyds Banking Group?
So at Lloyds, I am a lead engineer, which means I support a bunch of technicians who are out trying to to build the best bank they possibly can. I've been around for a while. I kind of started out in the mid-80s doing assembler while at university, and kind of grew into Java and C++. Applied to the Bank of Scotland as a programmer, hoping to go and do Java and C++, but I could also answer the COBOL questions. And I kind of fell into to mainframe and really got quite stuck into that. But yeah, it's been fun. It's been cool. A very quick career to date.
It sounds like the journey is going well. And tell us about that journey, Reg, especially around the DevOps mainframe. How did it start? Where did the, I guess, the idea come from at Lloyds, and how has that evolved over the last couple of years?
So within Lloyds and within my team, we kind of started back in the middle of 2016. So we had new threats coming across the horizon. So the rise of the Challenger Bank, so Monzos and Starlings were starting to appear. And they were perceived to be very customer focused, and they were perceived to be organizations that could pivot easily to be able to satisfy customer demands very quickly, which was potentially not something the more traditional banks could do, just because we've built up a legacy, and that's the good way of using the word legacy, of solid applications. And we also had quite a wide estate, because the large banks tended to be effectively amalgams of lots of mergers that have happened over the years, where these guys had a green field. So there was aspirations within the bank around cost, pace, and quality to see, could we use agile techniques to deliver change for our customers within the confines of what was then a very waterfall-centric organization. So we were thrust into a room with some business stakeholders who had come along with the problem we were going to try and solve, and we were given a pot of money and 6 months. And an agile coach, which was very important. But we had no tools, nothing you would recognize as anything from any kind of DevOps toolkit. It was literally post-it notes stuck on a glass wall. Our coach kept us on track. We did deliver change. We delivered change that had a measurable impact on our customers, which proved that you could do this within a large organization. We did have a catalogue of learning on the back of this, so things that caused us to slow down. So tools aside, things like process, the fact that we were effectively running over four locations. So we, on the back of the success of the experiment, we were endorsed by the organization to kind of take this to the next step and to try and set up some teams who would deliver in an agile way. So we kind of drew breath at that point, and we had to kind of analyze what we learned. So getting out the first of the big books of agile, we discovered a technique called value stream mapping. And so we started to look at our processes and where where the bottlenecks were, and started to look at how we could shift them. So like, for example, one of our early discoveries was test environments. And the fact that physical test environments that weren't owned by us were horrendous to book and to set up and to test in. And that was a gigantic lead time. So one of the first things we did was take control of our test environments. And then we started to look at how we could improve tooling. So we started to look at things like Topaz and Rational for Z, and things we could do to improve the developer's experience. And that allowed us to start to take baby steps. And we started with some little greenfield projects of our own. So where we could do test and learn activities without potentially dropping a bomb into the rest of the organization. So we could do a little bit of work and try things out.
Cool. And so gaining those successes along the way, I think one of the things we picked out was that you'd shared those experience, you shared those success stories around the business, and that enabled you to go and get more sponsorship to do more. Could you tell us how that helped you on I guess, your DevOps journey, and how it brings you now to this DevOps 2.0 messaging that you're going to talk through?
So I think one of the things that emerged quite early on was that the traditional ways of kind of capturing information within a large organization and sharing them around. Probably didn't, shall we say, sell the sizzle. They didn't get the flavor of what you could achieve with Agile and DevOps. So the whole reporting every month and filling in a spreadsheet to say how many things you'd done, it just depersonalizes everything. So as an organization, one of the early things we decided to do was to effectively set up a community. So we had, for the first time, a mainframe community. And we had we got the core vendors involved, and we got guys from around the organization who led mainframe development teams, and we sat in a room in Halifax with a blank sheet of paper. That has been one of the big successes. So the fact that we now have a central mainframe DevOps team and the entire organization participates. So the central team will do the heavy lifting on some big initiatives. So if there's something that needs a bit of investment, that's something that needs a significant time to be directed towards it, then they're able to do that. This is then federated out. So all the teams who are actually doing the work around the organization can consume the output from the central team in the form of accelerators, so they don't have to reinvent the wheel. But that doesn't mean we're stifling innovation. So it means that the teams can go off and they can solve problems that are unique to them. And then they can use the central team as a forum to be able to share that with other people who can then consume and build on lessons that they've learned as well. And this has been a wonderful thing within the organization. So before COVID-19, we used to have quarterly face-to-face sessions that kind of dotted around the country so that everybody could attend. Mm-hmm. And teams were encouraged to roll up and to do demos, live demos of things that they had done. We also invited the vendors along. Sure. So you guys got the opportunity to come in and show us your latest set of tools. Mm-hmm. And we try to be a very open and honest and collaborative community. And we want to partner with all our vendors, and we want to make sure that the guys around the organization have access to what's going on in all the teams and are able to share and to contribute.
Awesome.
Customers expect a more seamless experience, and there is a shift from the more traditional engagement models to more digital-centric models. That means that the expectation from the bank is a faster rate of change. So we have to be able to keep up with the Monzos and the Starlings of this world.
So great to hear there, Reggie's journey so far. And just thinking about some of the things that are creating drivers, he talks there about the challenger banks and how that was driving change at Lloyds Banking Group. But Stuart, I take it you've seen change both recently around the current situation we find ourselves in.
Yes. I'm a great believer in the compelling event. And for some instances, it's been an upstart, a digital unicorn that's come in, doesn't have the legacy to adapt. They can take the best of the technology and make it successful. Those instances bring the requirement to change. Coronavirus is absolutely turned people's delivery mechanisms upside down, people that aren't co-located any longer. But things have to be changed. The contactless limits having to be changed on UK banking facilities whilst people are in lockdown. A compelling event that happens drives innovation and has to result in success. And that's pretty exciting.
I totally agree. There's no gain without pain. And I think we're all feeling the pain at the moment, and this is the time to innovate. And if we're going to be successful, we have to differentiate ourselves from the competition. And that's exactly what Lloyds Banking Group is doing at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. And I think, you know, a lot of the feedback we've been hearing from our customers is that changing backlog, things that weren't necessarily important a few months ago are top of the list, and things that were important seem to have dropped down.
And I can only think of, you know, examples like Zoom having to rapidly adapt their approach to security. It wasn't part of their minimum viable product to get the tool to market. And then as soon as the exposure of the deficiency in the software, they've had to bring everyone around to dealing with that activity.
Indeed. Well, let's hear a little bit more from Reg and understand how testing has played a major part in that whole process.
Monzo, Starling and Revolut, they're the threat that we can see today. They're not necessarily the threat we're going to face in the next year or two. Apple, Amazon, Facebook, Google have all got aspirations in the payment space. So Google and Apple certainly have been looking at micropayments tied into their messaging systems. Facebook had recent experiments with blockchain. Amazon's payment engine is available to other people to integrate outside their platform. So these guys all have tremendous muscle and are all able to react very, very quickly to a changing market. And it's something that within Lloyds, we have to be able to do as well. So this kind of brings us on to the reason we're here, which is Agile and DevOps transformation on the mainframe. So mainframe with Agile and DevOps. If you'd said that to me 20 years ago, that would have been quite a scary prospect because everything was very physical. Everything was driven by bits of paper being shuffled around the organization. How can you make that flow faster? So the mainframe has been around for 50 plus years now. It has continued to evolve. I think where we've run into perception problems, the processes that support the mainframe kind of got stuck in the 70s. So the platform as a piece of technology has evolved, but we got to a state that was good enough for delivering change on the mainframe, and we kind of froze there. The rest of the world moved on. So at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is come up with a shippable increment of software, and we want to deliver that as quickly and as safely as possible. Now, over the last couple of years, we have evolved our DevOps capability as we have kind of run through test and learns and scaled up from one team to five teams to been able to deliver across multiple platforms. As I mentioned earlier, one of our early constraints was test environments. So we took control of the test environments. That got us into the discipline of delivering change in an automated way following a release pipeline. As we kind of scaled out the size of the team, so from one to five teams up to we're now at kind of 15 plus teams, environments once again became a constraint. That they're effectively trying to get all the teams to run to the same beat of the drum also started to become a constraint because teams need to be able to work independently of each other. So teams need to be able to deliver change at their pace that's right for them. So if something takes a day or two to develop, why would that have to wait for 2 months to find its way down the path and the route to live? Okay. Just because it was constrained, because it was being tested in an environment with a piece of work that was running at a slower pace. So one of our next accelerator to move things forward is to be able to give each team their own environment. So each team can have an environment for a particular feature. And that is effectively a ring-fenced sandbox that will allow them to develop. So we're moving towards an environment where the delivery of change is segmented by feature. Each feature will be completely independent and it will be ring-fenced and protected by things like branch protection. So we'll do the development work so the actual cutting of the code will happen in a combination of GitHub and Topaz. So it will use the features that you get out of the box from GitHub, the features that the guys who work in the distributed stack take for granted. So the ability to have branch protection, to have feature branches, to do trunk-based development. That's all expected from the guys who work in GitHub. There's no reason we can't do that in the mainframe. So we're going to move to managing feature-level branches in GitHub. That does mean that we can integrate things like SonarQube for code quality. We can integrate automated testing. The whole thing can be stitched together with webhooks so that everything happens at the push of a button so the developer can promote code and the code will be scanned for rules compliance. It'll be automatically regression tested. We'll have things like the branch protection in GitHub, which means that concurrent development on the same module is possible, because if a piece of code gets out of sync, then the other developers working on the same piece of code will then have to do a pull request to bring their branch back up to date again. These environments will be cloud hosted, so we can spin them up, so we can have as many as we need. So a team who's working on multiple features could have multiple copies of their own mainframe. And we only pay for the compute that we need, so we can spin them up, spin them down. They're going to run, the mainframe emulation will run with Docker. So they can be built like that. So 2.5 minutes, you can have a mainframe environment with your version of your application installed, ready to go and ready to start testing your change. So the DevOps toolchain that delivers change for our mainframe is going to be almost identical to the DevOps toolchain that delivers change for our digital stack.
It's showing how the evolution of the pipeline is driving further and further productivity for your mainframe environment.
Absolutely. And so this is all about making things go faster. So the change, like I said, the change that doesn't have to wait for a big release can run quickly. So lots of change could be reference data, for example, if we're going to switch something on or off. Mm-hmm. That doesn't have to go into release. So we can spin up environments which are baselined with production that allow you to test a small change. And then you can deliver that change on the route to live. So the route to live on my diagram is the point where you would join a physical real mainframe, as opposed to one of my dynamic mainframes. Mm-hmm. And the key to making that run as fast as possible is effectively, we have a concept which we're calling a release bus stop, which is the entry point onto the real machine. So that's where we're going to concentrate all the test firepower, and we want that environment to be continuously tested, so that you get regression tests for free, because that environment will be tested like production all the time. So we're going to use a combination of some of our batch tools that we've developed that are run under Urban Code Deploy and Topaz Functional Test to concentrate all our test firepower in that one area, so that on the smoking gun principle, that the last engineer who delivers a change to that environment and then breaks it is the guy who caused the problem, gives us a lot of confidence that changes when they depart from our release bus stop have been thoroughly tested.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll use the handoffs and controls that are available through release management tools to make sure that entry point to the release bus stop becomes a responsibility for the functional tester who's going to be monitoring what's going on within that environment and making sure the developers extend the test. And then promotion onto our integration test environment, it'll be a combination of our quality assurance team who run the end-to-end test environment that the change is safe to be deployed. Because of the automation and because of the tooling involved, we will actually, for the first time, be able to test our deployments end to end, because traditionally things were done by hand in the sort of entry level environments, and you would never deploy a change to a unit test environment the same way you would deploy a change to production. So this pattern means that we will be able to deploy our applications in exactly the same way in every stage of our route to live, from the lowest environment to production. So we will have ultimate confidence when we go live that not only have we thoroughly tested the code, but we've thoroughly tested the deployment and backup of the code as well, because it's going to be the same set of tools all the way on our route to live.
So yet further insight there, guys, from Reg on how testing was a vital part of this journey. And Atul, is that something that you're seeing in the rest of your contact base?
Most definitely. It's something that has been identified as a very common area of constraint at most of the accounts I'm involved with.
Mm-hmm.
They spend a majority of their time in the testing phase, and the constraints, things like even setting up the test data, execution of the tests, or validating test results. Quite commonly, it's done manually, and it's not always done to the standard to which they expect. So quality is suffering, efficiency itself is suffering as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a common thread I'm finding in the industry in terms of having to address this. And if they don't address this, then the rest of their development lifecycle is impacted by it as well. So that's a great point that he made.
Thanks, Atul. So in that section, Reg talks about the smoking gun principle. And Stuart, during your time in industry, that's obviously something that you need to be aware of and tick from a regulatory perspective. But obviously, we don't want to be holding guns to developers' heads.
No, it's a good point that highly regulated environments do have minimum viable compliance to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
But from the culture perspective, one doesn't want to be shooting messengers. You want to get people in a mindset where it's absolutely a benefit to call out limitations or potential compliance issues so that they can be addressed before they cause any kind of reputational damage or loss of anything,
mm-hmm.
loss of data, customer data, breaches of GDPR rules.
So let's finish off with Reg explaining what the future looks like and underlining the success that Lloyd's have achieved in this area.
Reg, that was awesome. Great to see the advance that you guys have been making and the continued evolution of that pipeline discussion. Do you can see a continuation of the evolution of that pipeline, and how will you continue to identify the bottlenecks in your delivery capability?
We're moving to the next stage, but it's not the final stage. Mm-hmm. It'll be in parallel with the introduction to Agile and DevOps, we've also looked at dashboarding. Metrics is a force for good rather than evil. Mm-hmm. So metrics that will enable the individual teams to be able to judge how fast they're delivering change. So we have dashboards that individual teams can use, which will tell them what their cycle time is. Mm-hmm. So cycle time from ready to done, from an issue being opened in Jira to being delivered alive. So we can see how much of the time taken is actually business faffing around. So from an IT perspective, a team can say that, okay, yeah, it might take us, I don't know, 8 weeks to deliver a change, but half of that time was actually spent with the business understanding the problem. And that wasn't the time that we spent delivering the change, just so that people can be fair and we can be open and transparent. This is a very transparent process. We've looked at metrics. We've used some metrics from ZAdvisor so we can actually check that as we roll out new versions of the tool, that we are penetrating the team. Because from our perspective, if we're delivering new capability, we want the guys to be able to use it. We want to be able to target help and training. But we also want to kind of try and get rid of some of the noise so that within our team, if somebody says this isn't working anymore, then we can say we're now released 20.2 of Topaz and you're still on 18 point something.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's not working. So we can kind of preempt some of that. So we can use dashboards to kind of steer the team both from a delivery perspective and from a technical perspective. The teams have embraced this dashboarding technology, and a lot of the teams have got engineering dashboards as well, which show the states of their automated tests and their performance and the route to live. Back to they will get the red light will flash if something breaks in their system test environment, because it is monitored. The metrics is a force for good. These are metrics that have been set up by the team in mainly, rather than things that have been forced on them from the center.
Sure. And monitoring those results and taking action upon them is a group activity. How do you kind of decide which are the next levers that you pull upon?
So that is the return of value stream mapping.
Okay.
So as we within our lab structure now, there will be regular prioritization of what the workload is from our product owning community, and the engineers will morph the engineering teams to match. At the point that we do mix things up a bit more, we will start to look at what's required to now deliver change, and that will steer the next set of engineering priorities. So that could be an increase in automated test capability. It could be an increase in the ability to provision things with cloud technology. It could lead us to training or process changes. So I think in general, we're looking for people to eventually become more comb-shaped, Craig. So So rather than so everybody talked about a T-shaped individual who would be broad range of experience and might be deep in a single subject.
Sure.
So we want to give the teams the opportunity to get as broad as they want and to get in, as deep into as many different topics.
Yeah.
Which makes things fun again, which is half the battle.
Absolutely. And so when we talk about fun, Reg, obviously we're in a very kind of peculiar time at the moment, and your team is close-knit community in the office, but I guess you're spread around. So how are you managing the lockdown and how are you kind of keeping morale bubbling away?
So I think we have probably interacted as a group more since the lockdown than we ever did before. So one of the things that run our wider team, so the team that our team is a part of, we run a Thursday night pub quiz. So Thursday night, end of the business day, there's a pub quiz that runs across teams. It's a good laugh, and I can say the card servicing lab are currently top of the leaderboard. So
it's not about competing; it's about winning, right, Reg?
Absolutely,
great stuff, and glad to hear the team are still buoyant and happy. And one of the other things that we're doing for our podcast listeners is trying to help them with suggested reading tips and things like that as well. So is there anything that sticks out in your mind as to what can help them embrace this kind of thinking and adapt their own business in the same way?
So I have built quite a large bookshelf over the last couple of years, but there are a couple of authors who keep cropping up. So probably the obvious ones are Gene Kim and Jez Humble. If you're looking for somewhere to get started, I would say Accelerate is a good place to start. Then for kind of next steps, the DevOps Handbook. And then for the deep cuts, it would be something like Continuous Delivery. If you're going to the deep cuts, get the hardback of it version just to be really, really hardcore. For Agile Process, I would say Mike Cohen is a really good source, a fantastic blog. A couple of books on Mike's would be User Stories Applied and Essential Scrum. So probably start with Essential Scrum, and then when you start getting challenges from your team about writing stories, then move into User Stories Applied.
Great stuff. Well, I'll pop some of those into the show notes so that we've got some links available for our listeners. And Reg, it goes without saying that I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us in this crazy period. And we look forward to spending some time with you back up in the north of England.
North of England.
North of England.
North of England.
I obviously meant Halifax. That's what I meant, yeah. Right? But really do appreciate your time, your insight, and of course your guidance on our readers as well. So, Reg, thank you very much for your time.
Cool. Thank you, Craig.
So there we have it, Reg Wilkinson taking us through his journey that will continue, and we look forward to continuing that journey with Reg and the team. One of the things I wanted to ask you about there, Stuart, was Reg's view of looking at a single source of the truth for their source code management platform, things like GitHub Enterprise are recognized within the industry, you know, with 40 million plus users. GitHub Enterprise obviously has got the eyes of a lot of the developers around the world. And how important is that for, you know, large organizations like Lloyd's to go and adopt those new developers from industry?
I think it's important, but it's not just from the tooling perspective of using familiar interfaces. It's a classic way of breaking down silos that new hires know how to use GitHub. Long-standing employees maybe have to go to the newer employees to ask, how do I do this in GitHub? CompuWare talks to its customers. A chap called Mike Wells, he, over a weekend, got rid of all the Windows PCs and just introduced Macs into his development organization. Because he saw the age differential separating people, so he brought in some new tech that meant that the longer standing generation had to talk to the newest generation to ask questions as well. So it was a two-way thing, broke down that silo of age and experience to make it one development team.
And finally, Atul, just following up there from last week's conversation, Reg spoke within the section there around measurement and using metrics. And I know it's something we discussed last week, but it seems that it's pervasive across the successful companies. Where else are you seeing that?
So I am seeing that across the board. But one thing that Reg did mention was that these are engineering dashboards, and they've been widely adopted by the teams because they actually believe in them. They've not been forced upon them at all. And I suppose this is part of an indicator of the change in culture within such a large organization. It's not about using a stick to force people to adhere to certain dashboards, certain metrics. It's about making sure that they understand the value of it and allowing them to contribute towards it and then to use them as a stepping stone towards continuous improvement into the future. So I think that cultural change has had a massive impact around the metrics and the dashboarding mechanism that they're using for feedback moving forward. And they've got buy-in at all levels within the organization. So highly impressed with that.
And is that the kind of thing that would have been useful for yourself in industry, Stuart?
Oh, wow. It's the biggest thing. Since CompuWare introduced the Z-Advisor tool, I reflect on the fact that I didn't consider measurement all those months and years ago. And that was a real schoolboy error, that at points when I was asked what had I delivered in the measurable terms, all I could say was, well, there's a Jenkins pipeline now doing automation. So if I had my time again, I would absolutely want Z-Advisor available to me.
Well, it just so happens we can help you there. But just before we do break on our second session now, Reg spoke there about some of his reading material. And Stuart, in your new role, you get a chance to share some of your own reading material with lots of the customers that you engage with. So is there anything that you'd pull out that you'd recommend for our listeners to get their eyes and ears into?
Yeah, a lot of people talk about the Phoenix Project. I fell in love with the Unicorn Project, the 5 or 6 years later, Gene Kim has taken the same scenario, but done it from a developer's perspective. It's a novel, it's easy to read, and there are some good lessons to be learnt. And my favourite reference book really is DevOps in the Modern Enterprise by Mirko Herring. Okay. It's one that I constantly refer back to.
Good, good. Well, thank you for that, and thank you both for your input and feedback. Gents, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate you putting the effort in, and hope to have you on another podcast soon. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Craig.
Cheers.
The BMC AMI Z Talk and CompuWare Modern Mainframe Podcast have joined forces. You can find your favorite episodes from both podcasts, as well as new insight and discussion, soundcloud.com/modern mainframe. CompuWare is now BMC CompuWare, providing a complete app dev toolkit which enables you to make the mainframe as adaptive as any other platform and start your journey to becoming an autonomous digital enterprise with a mainframe-inclusive DevOps toolchain.